Hello, and thanks for tuning in. I'm Jimmy Franklin, the Europe, Middle East and Africa reporter at IFLR, and I'll be hosting today's podcast, which focuses on working in the financial services industry and being part of the LGBT community. The financial services industry has historically not had the best reputation for diversity, but in recent years, you can't help but notice that many are trying to change this, whether that be by setting up LGBT plus networks in the workplace, or by taking an active role in the community beyond the office, such as having a float at LGBT plus pride events, or organising talks during LGBT plus History Month. Discussing these important issues with me today is London Stock Exchange Group's Arlene McDermott. Hi, Arlene.
Hi.
Arlene is Portfolio Director with the Stock Exchange's LCH and is also co-chair of Proud, which is the organisation's LGBT plus network. Arlene recently featured in the Pride Power List and Diva Magazine's Visible Lesbian 100 list. So, Arlene, it is a pleasure to speak with you. I think it would be really great to start by hearing about your personal journey to coming out and being part of the LGBT plus community.
It's my coming out story is it's pretty interesting. I had a very forward thinking mother for the days that it was, and you know, in Ireland where I grew up in Dublin, it was still illegal to be gay. It was probably more for that law was, I'm sure, more targeted toward men than it was women, but we were all caught up in it. And, you know, I can remember in my early days being in some popular bars when I was young and I was just coming out first. And, you know, and it would be, you know, you'd need to leave because there was word that, you know, the police might be on their way. So, and I think it was 1993 when it was legalized. So that was the kind of environment that I was growing up in. It was absolutely okay to be homophobic. It was absolutely okay to be violent toward people within the LGBT plus community. But among all of that, I had my mother, who was incredible and who had had a conversation with my father when I was as young as 16 regarding whether he thought I might be gay. And apparently that conversation ended with him saying, so long as she's happy, I don't care what she is. So, I mean, you know, we're going back a time here. It was quite incredible. But I suppose my coming out story, what I did was I picked people that were way outside my circles, so way outside my friendship circles, people that I cared about losing, certainly, but I had to kind of try it out on some people in case that might be the consequence. I mean, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't. And, you know, there was one group that I used to volunteer for, who will remain nameless, and they did ostracize me. But because of all the support that I'd had coming out, I was able to stand up and say, you did this to me, at a very public event when they were having a conversation and about being gay, and they'd had some people come in who I knew from the scene to talk about it. So essentially, so that was the kind of environment that I was in. And I had started to, I was 18. I'd started to tell people then who were slightly closer to me, slightly closer. And probably, you know, I had a few different groups of friends that I talked to, all of whom were completely uninterested, quite frankly, and who supported me in coming out. I think the funniest time was when I used to play in bands in Dublin, as almost every Dubliner does at one point in their life. And my mother was driving me to a band practice in North Dublin. And she was talking all the way about friends of ours who were gay. Did you know he's gay? Did you know that person was gay? Did you know you have a cousin in Australia who's gay? It was just really, really kind of like quite a pressurized conversation. And she said in that, and I'll never forget this, she said, I can never understand what it's like to be gay because I'm not, but I will always accept anybody who is. And then we arrived at the destination and she pulled up the handbrake and said, but you understand what it's like, don't you? And I said, So, you know, and she said, I've known since you were a child. So she was amazing. And there were members of my family who had it, who struggled with it. And she made it very clear to them that, you know, they needed to love me and accept me the way she did. So mine was a happy one, I have to say. Mm. Yes, there were times when, you know, I was ostracized or that I felt uncomfortable, but my parents, I mean, I have to say, every time I broke up with a girlfriend, my mum always did say, maybe you'll find yourself a nice man now. So I don't know what that was about, but she was hugely, both my parents were really supportive. I have two brothers. They were amazing. My sister, you know, took her a while to come to terms. She had this kind of idyllic thing where I was going to have kids and my husband living next to her husband and her kids. But, you know, that's not a story that was ever going to happen, no matter what orientation I was, to be honest. But anyway, we all love each other now, and it's all good.
That's a really positive story. And I think actually it reminds me slightly of when I came out to my nan, actually, who again was uber open about it, has two gay men who basically look after her these days. And basically what happened was I was talking to her and she suddenly just shoehorned into the conversation somehow. She was like, and how was it for you when you came out as gay? And I was like, well, I haven't actually said this to you before. But I think those kind of family stories are incredibly positive and always very uplifting to hear about.
Yeah.
And I think skipping ahead to the workplace a bit, mm-hmm. I think it'd be great to hear how important do you think it is to be your true self to your workplace, you know, i.e. being out to colleagues, and how can colleagues be supportive of this? Because one thing I've always questioned is whether I need to instantly address the matter of my sexuality at work. And because in which in part it's quite open, it's good to be open, but about at the same time, it means I can end up coming out over and over again to various different people.
I don't think personally, you know, when I meet people at work, generally I talk about their job before I talk about their personal life, and it probably takes a while before I would start, you know, getting to know their husband or wife's name or partner's name or if they have children or whatever. And I'm just going to address this. For me, it just comes out in conversation. So, you know, it'll be, you know, I'll talk about Sarah, my partner, or Neve, my daughter, which really confuses people. You know, I'll just talk like anybody else is talking about their partner. I talk about my partner and then that's it's there. And I don't have to make an announcement that you're now working with a gay woman. I just exactly the same way as I get to know somebody is exactly the way they would get to know me. Now, that's because I am comfortable with who I am in the workplace. That's because I do bring my true self to work. And because I feel comfortable doing that, completely comfortable with that. And I've worked in many industries. I've worked in the voluntary sector. I've worked in government. I worked for the FCA for quite a while. And I've worked in the city. And obviously now I'm at LSEG. You know, I've gotten to a point in my life and probably in my career as well where I'm, you know, people have said things, but I'm entirely unfazed by it in different jobs that I've had. It always comes back to me, and that's how people are shown their support, you know, I always find. So is it important to be your true self? I mean, look, you know, it's kind of like the way I look at it is imagine you have got a really worrying personal problem that you're having to deal with at home. And it's something you're ashamed of, or you don't want to tell people at work. Mm-hmm. How much time? Or actually, forget even not telling people. Just say you've got this really worrying situation, right? It could be grieving. It could be, you know, somebody, a person loves being ill, whatever that is. The amount of time that occupies your mind and the amount of your mind that takes up, I equate that to the amount of your mind that gets taken up by trying to hide who you are. So let's just, you know, if we just go to hard facts, to me then, as a manager, am I really getting my best from you? Am I really, are you really able to, I mean, and people, and this is why I have so much respect for people in the community who've been through this, because I think, oh my God, and you managed to get your job done and stay employed, having that weight on your shoulders, you know? Because I think it's a really, it's dangerous for the individual, for their mental health. It's not good for business at all. We've proven that over and over again, that the bottom line suffers when people aren't out at work. You know, it's not good for building a team, because there's this question that's going on, and maybe there isn't a question, and maybe it's just in the mind of the individual. It's a horrible, all-round, nasty situation, and it needs to stop, and it needs to be, we need to eradicate it. So, you know, how can colleagues be supportive of that? Well, you know, I don't know how individual colleagues can be supportive of it. But I tell you how we enable people to be. So you've got to give people a platform to show their support, right? We have football matches so everybody can get together to support their team. So we have to do that in the workplace. We have to create a platform where the guy who sits next to you, who's married to a woman, has three kids, blah, 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 is your typical middle-class city worker, can show up at a LGBT plus event, can show their face, can say, yeah, I'm here, I'm interested in this, this is great, I love it. You know, it, we have to make, those platforms are so important, because, you know, I mean, people can't walk around saying, hey, I'm okay with people being gay, I'm okay with people being gay, because that's just ridiculous and that won't work. But what we do have to do is we've got to be very loud to those people who are not out, to say to them, be out, don't be out, you choose, but this is a place that you, it will be safe for you to be out. And we have to give the firm the platform to support and show their support, not just for LGBT plus people, but parent and carers, you know, all sorts of, but we have to create that platform. And that to me is what's really, really important.
Absolutely. And one thing I've noticed in my workplace is this kind of drive for inclusivity. And this kind of being done through, at times, I guess, quite simple but quite effective things. So, for example, LGBT lanyards and, you know, events during Pride Month. Do you think that these things are effective? And what other things do you think that organisations can do to be truly inclusive of LGBT plus people?
I kind of like it, isn't it incredible that we're still talking about inclusivity for people who are gay? It's just, you know, it blows my mind. I actually thought I actually thought up to not that long ago that actually we were through this. I thought we'd gotten out the other side of it. And I found when I started with myself and others in the organization, because certainly it wasn't just me, started the network, we were surprised at the fact that we're really not out the other side of this. So, yeah, lanyards are great. I hand them out to people constantly, all the time. I buy bags of lanyards and I just give them out to anybody who wants one. Most people do as well, by the way. You know, I just before lockdown, I was in a pub in the city and, you know, had horrible homophobia thrown at me. You know, by five people who walked into a bar, and I wouldn't get that at work, you know, but I get it outside. It does happen, you know, funnily enough, not in the countryside where I live, but in the city I do. Yeah, I get that. I'm sure many people do.
So obviously that's important to hear about what happened just before lockdown, but How do you think that things have changed in the financial services in terms of acceptance and visibility? And how quickly have attitudes and work culture changed for the better here?
I mean, I think the city's doing an incredible job. I really do. I mean, you only have to look at, you know, YouTube for videos from Barclays, who've done, you know, an incredible job on their Spectrum network. You know, turning logos rainbow during Pride Month, you know, big networks. I you know, I was at an event in a building in the city and it was an insurance company, and it was, God, this was probably, I want to say maybe around Christmas time, just gone. And they had like male toilets, female toilets, gender neutral toilets. I was just like, I was blown away. They've really, really taken this really seriously. And I find that, I think it's great. I mean, we work really closely with Pride in the City, which is run by one guy, Belton, who is an extraordinary individual, who brings together all of the, networks really from across the city. And, you know, we ran a market close event in January. And we used the event to launch Pride in the City and their 2020 agenda. And I tell you, we were packed out, you know. There were banks, Mars was there, Disney. I mean, it was really incredible. I think the city's doing a great job. I don't think society's doing a great job. I think the city's doing a great job. I think the unfortunate visibility of hate against LGBT plus people that social media makes available to us, I think has caused no end of damage. I think the reason that really young people are concerned about coming out is because they don't want to be the target of that. Mm. I think that's where the real danger is. I feel like as if people like me who've been out and been comfortable and been happy and blah, 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 and it's no big issue, I feel like as if we've had to now emerge again to go, whoa, hang on a second. This generation of kind of graduates coming into the workforce are beginning to ask that question again. Is it okay to be out here? Which is boggling to me.
Absolutely. And in terms of being a good ally at work, what are the main things that you think people should aspire to?
Show up, you know, show that support. And like I say, I know we'll talk about the networks in a minute, but an LGBT plus network within an organization creates somewhere for people to show up. Show your face, you know, show the fact that you are supporting by attending these things. I mean, there was when we did our market close event for Pride in the City, we had multiple members of our executive committee on the platform where we do the market close, and I tell you, it was incredible to see. And that was anybody who doubted if the organisation wasn't behind them didn't doubt it if they saw that. And obviously there's pictures all over our internet and things like that. Because having some of the most senior staff sends two messages. One, you're supported if you're in the community. And two, you won't be supported if you're against the community or show anything to make anybody uncomfortable. I mean, that's the message across the board for any sort of inclusivity. But that's what it says. Don't be afraid. So, you know, it's really important that we are, like I say, creating and leading the charge in creating events, things, places where people can raise their voices in support. Because as I say, if we don't do that, and if there isn't those platforms, then how do you kind of say, I'm all right with this? I mean, our CEO has a rainbow flag on his door, right? So the chairman of LCH has a rainbow flag in his office, which is completely visible from outside his office because it's all glass. We have rainbow flags dotted all over the offices. So it's there. It's always there. Always has to be. Has to be there all the time.
That's brilliant. And it sounds absolutely fabulous, really. And how important is it to have an LGBT plus affinity network in an organisation for you?
I mean, for us, it's been critical. It was, we started it, we're a pretty young network, and we started it during, you know, kind of marking the 50th anniversary of Stonewall last year. And it kind of started with somebody phoning me from New York asking if I was doing any Pride celebrations in London. And I was like, what? Why would I be? And then I kind of went, oh, actually, yeah. And then I went down to our head of HR and asked her if she had done anything. She says, well, I've got 100 Pride flags in my cupboard. And I said, okay, well, can I just take this then and we'll do something? And so I ordered another 200 flags plus massive, huge 5-foot by 3-foot flags as well. And we, a few of us came in of a morning and we just covered the office in rainbow flags. Covered us. Like you couldn't move for rainbow flags. We had in the breakout areas, we had big, huge rainbow flags up in there. And then we had for the day, which was the Friday, it was the 5th of July, we just got like loads of cakes, loads of lanyards and raised, you know, we raised like 400 quid, which was then price matched for Stonewall. So that was like 800 quid. It was really nice. And people were really generous. But again, it gave people a platform and people came by and they were like, oh my God, I'll get a donut and have a chat. And we put up this big wall of paper and asked people, what do they want from these kind of inclusive networks and that kind of thing. People gave us some really great commentary back. But, you know, there was people who came up to me and said that they, you know, they weren't out at work. They came in to a sea of rainbow flags. And that was, you know, that meant a lot. That was huge for them. And it changed. I think it changed everything really quite dramatically, actually, in a really great way. So, it's just crucial because, like I say, as I keep saying, networks create the platform. They send great messages, but they create the platform. And also do some really practical things like, you know, we've looked through our policies to make sure that they're not in any way exclusive, you know, in terms of the language that's used in them. We're, you know, trying to get... We have a foundation, which is an incredible charitable element of our firm, does amazing things. And we're making sure that they have an LGBT plus charity that benefits from the foundation. We're given 2 volunteering days a year to go and do something for the community, which we don't have to take as leave. And so this year, me and some others are organising a bike ride. And again, it's a platform. You know, if we can get people in to do that, they get their volunteering day. They get to be part of the network and our activities. So, yeah, it's great. It's really good. It's really important.
And I think one final thing that would be very good to discuss. Did the changes in law, I guess, did they drive social acceptance or do you think it was the other way around? So, you know, this is laws such as Section 28, which was in the process of being repealed when I was at school. And also what was very interesting for me was in the kind of process of coming out, I did it at a time when the campaign for same-sex marriage really gained momentum, when the debates were taking place in the UK Houses of Parliament. And also, I guess I kind of, you know, one of the things I remember once I pretty much told everyone and, you know, it become accepted and known, then it was being legalised and passed through into law. So yeah, it'd be really great to hear how much of an effect you think these laws have on changing social attitudes.
So I suppose it depends on what part of your society you're looking at. There are clearly huge numbers of people who would have always supported marriage equality, who would always have supported people being together in a relationship. Why not? Why can't you get married? I never thought I could get, I never thought marriage would be available to me in my lifetime. And I'm so happy that it is because I've always wanted to get married. Maybe I'm quite traditional, but I've always wanted to be married. And will be soon. So like I say, it depends on where you look at these things. You know, if we think about the protests that have been happening in Birmingham, for example, you know, Section 28's out of the way and those schools want to have discussion about relationships and types of relationships. And my 11-year-old has those discussions in our school, you know, talking about different types of families. But you can see that. I mean, if I'm, you know, 17, 18, discovering my orientation and I see that, you know, how am I going to feel? What am I going to think when we watched people on television during the marriage equality debates, and they're sat there, people that you know, that you've known all your life on TV, newsreaders and presenters and all of these actors and all these people, and they're debating whether or not I should have a right to be married or have a right to have children. I mean, it was, to me, it was heartbreaking. I was watching this thinking, oh my God. And of course, we've always known that the Catholic Church and the Church of England aren't particularly supportive of LGBT plus people because of a misreading of Leviticus. You know, that they then showed their colours and came out hugely. So what you got then was this side of society that was suddenly given this platform to be completely homophobic and to say, well, no, actually, I don't think that people should be able to get married if they're not a man and a woman. And then started to go to this ridiculous place of saying, well, where does it end? Can three men get married? Can two men and a dog get married? And I listened to this and I was really saddened by it. You know, I listened to it and thought, you're talking about my right to marry the woman I love. That's what you're talking about. And it was interesting. I was at a kind of a pub quiz in our village hall, and I was sat next to the vicar who was on my team. And this wasn't that long ago, so this is like in the last 5 years. And I said to him, would you marry Sarah and I in the church? And of course, what we must remember is that at the time that they passed marriage equality, they also at the same time banned churches from being able to marry same-sex couples. So we have this ridiculous situation where it's okay for a vicar to be gay, but a vicar can't get married in the church. You know, just crazy. So anyway, so he said to me, he said, well, of course, it's not legal for me to do that, but I would bless your union any day of the week. And this is a guy who knows us and knows our daughter and everything. And he then said, and he's a lovely, lovely man, a really lovely man. I mean, I'm not religious, by the way, at all. Mm-hmm. But this guy's, he's just a very, very sweet man. And he said, you know, he turned back to me about 10 minutes later and he said, Arlene, he said, I know you said that to me really flippantly. He said, I just want to, you know, he said, I've always believed that that the sacrament of marriage is between a man and a woman, because I believe that that sacrament is there to promote family, and a man and a woman in procreation to create family. And he said, and since I met you and Sarah and your daughter, that has been blown apart for me, because here I see you, my daughter has special needs, here I see you supporting family, being a family, like any other family, and I'm now thrown into this crisis in my belief, because I can no longer say, well, it shouldn't be between a man and a woman, because that's family. He said, and I've met you and your family, and there's no way would I think that anymore. And then he was saying, I can't talk to anybody in the clergy about it, because they don't want to talk about it. And I can't talk to people outside of it because they think I'm a bigot. He says, I'm just finding this really difficult. And I thought that was really courageous of him to admit that.
Mm.
Because your question, do I think it advances us socially in this area? I don't know. I think a lot of the time we hope that most of society is accepting of us. And those debates, Section 28, then there was marriage equality in Ireland not so long ago. I don't know. I think it brings out the worst of people. I don't know that it advances. And I think where people might have been on the fence or undecided, unfortunately, the loudness of that message of it's bad, you know, it just, the volume goes up considerably. I mean, when I was... and I'll finish on this. So when I was adopted my daughter, she was in Ireland, and I was not allowed to apply to adopt her because I'm gay, right? Imagine saying that to, you know, somebody of colour.
Of course.
Just like, you know, Do you know what I mean? So I was told that I called one of the authorities over there, and they said, there's no way can you do this. And the way I did it in the end was that my daughter was born in England, so we could make use of UK law. Isn't that incredible? It's a long story around that, but that was the right way and it was the right answer. And now she's a fantastic 11-year-old. But, you know, that blows my mind. And that 2017 was when that was changed. Only, though, where if you're, and I don't know if this is different since then, but only if you are, so if you're a heterosexual couple, you don't need to be married. But if you're a gay couple, you do. So that's brilliant. So there's still a bit of conditionality going on there. So do I think law has helped? Yeah, look, we need these laws. We have to have them. We have to have our equal rights. You know, there's absolutely no sensible person that thinks that I shouldn't be able to marry, you know. So we have to have those laws in there. Do I think it advances us socially? I don't know. I'm not so sure, really. But we have to have those rights. We can't not have the law on our side. That's just ridiculous in 2020.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting to highlight the double standards that can sometimes come up in these laws.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's podcast. It was a pleasure to speak to you, Arlene, and many congratulations on your wedding.
Thank you.
And may I just say thank you to everyone for listening, and keep an eye out for future podcasts from the IFLR team on our website, iflr.com, as well as our pages on LinkedIn and Twitter. Bye for now.